with FSF Europe bands on his own, and also being a really important part of the GPL V3 process. I'm sure a lot of you saw the work that he did while that was going on. So welcome, Kieran.
It's nice to actually feel welcome, because for many years I was like the boogeyman at conferences. People would come and present their software and they'd show what new features they'd coded in the last year, and then I'd come along and I'd say, software patents. I have to tell everyone to be scared. So I do feel welcome. And when I started out working on software patents, I was working in Ireland. And in Ireland, a group of us, we formed a group an organization to work specifically on software patents. It was called the Irish Free Software Organization. And some people like our t-shirts. We have a GNU playing a harp. So my background, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a legal expert. I'm a computer programmer by trade, or at least I was until I started getting interested in software patents. So what this means is that I'm not a general spokesperson on software patents. So sometimes people ask me for my opinion on the TomTom case, or will Bilski go to the Supreme Court, and usually I don't know these things. I'm a programmer. What I do know is what I saw in the European Parliament, because I was working on this between 2003 and 2005, and just from the general lobbying that we did during that and a bit after as well. So this is the first positive talk I've given about software patents. Things are going well recently. The most decisive battles in the last few years have been in the EU, the Bilski case, and India. So in the EU, very briefly, what happened was that there was a proposal to have software patents, and we fought back and forth for what was actually 8 years in total, and in the end, the entire proposal was just scrapped. So it was all that work for nothing, but at least we showed that we could match the effort of the pro-software patent campaigners, and we gained a lot of political support, and we showed that we can actually perform in this arena, and that we can actually be involved in the legislative procedures. And it was also impressive from one other way, because in Europe, we didn't really have structures working on software patents. Not big structures, at least. It wasn't organized. We used to read Slashdot, and we'd read about crazy patents in the USA, and we thought that was hilarious. And then it landed on our coast. But it was amazing. Very quickly, there was a movement created, and we managed to actually be effective. So that was impressive. So then the second major decision was the Bilski case. And I didn't actually follow the Bilski case, because another thing in Europe is we thought that, oh, it's pointless in the USA, that'll be the last country to get rid of software patents. So we were really happy when I read the results of the Bilski case. It's very useful, and the US Board of Appeals is now actually overturning certain patents, mostly IBM patents, based on the Bilski decision. So it really does have a concrete outcome. So when we declare victory, it's not just a political victory, because everyone has to declare victory in politics. It's actually a real victory. And it doesn't just affect the USA, because a lot of software businesses are global. And the TomTom case is a good example, because TomTom is a company in the Netherlands, but the litigation is happening in the US, because, well, that's the court that Microsoft has filed the documents at, and Microsoft has contacted the International Trade Commission to ask for a block on TomTom's products. So even for European companies, what happens in the USA is important. And a second reason is that countries around the world, when they're talking about their patent policy, are usually asked to harmonize with the rest of the world, and the rest of the world usually means the USA. So the Bilski case is important for people all around the world. And the third example, the third big decision was in India, and most people don't even know that there was a big decision in India. I think it was 2005. There was a proposal to change the legislation to have software patents. And there was a mad battle for maybe 3 weeks, and the media discussed it for about a week and a half, and then the parliament decided, yeah, that is a bad idea, let's not have software patents. And in Europe, we were left scratching our heads, wondering what just happened there. it took us 8 years to do that. So we feel kind of inefficient now. But the lack of awareness of what happened in India kind of means that there's a gap, there's something not happening right in the communication. So, okay, so I'm working for End Software Patents now, and that's a campaign, it's a slightly separate project from FSF, but the funding has come from FSF. However, software patents, it has to be made clear that it's not a free software issue, because we don't want people to think adopting free software means you now have a software patent problem. No, software patents, they're a threat to all different types of users of software. There are some problems that free software developers have. For example, we can't get a license per copy or per user for a patent. So in that way, software patents cause a particular problem for free software. But in other ways, we have certain advantages. For example, our development is distributed. A lot of our development is by volunteers, so there aren't big pots of gold that litigators can look at. And another thing is that because free software can be edited by anyone, if there's a problem with one part of an application, you don't have to take the whole application off the market or tell people don't use the application. We can just take out that one infringing part and the rest of the application can continue to be used by as many people as possible. So it's there are pluses and minuses for free software in software patents, but it's not at all a free software problem. And this has been confirmed by the previous executive director of End Software Patents, Ben Clemens. He did a study of how software patents are impacting American companies, and he found that the litigation is costing American companies $11.2 billion. And the most of the companies being litigated against, it's not free software companies, it's not even software companies, it's car manufacturers, it's food companies, it's any big company, any company with a pot of gold in the bank, because the point that Ben Clemens highlighted is that every company is a software company. Every company has a few programmers down in the basement that keep the email servers working, that make a website, that give you options to interact with your clients. And every company that does this is, without knowing it, is in the software business. And they're the biggest targets. It's not free software, it's non-software companies are the biggest targets for software patents. So this means that they should be doing the work, not me. So why aren't they? Now this is the problem. There are three categories of people, three main categories that will fight against software patents, now or in the future. There is the free software community, there is the small companies in general, and there is non-software companies. Now, in Europe, we got a lot of help from the small companies. They have unions, and the unions talk to the politicians, and they tell the politicians that software patents are too expensive, completely unusable, it doesn't work with small companies. In America, from what I've heard, that isn't happening so much. The small companies, they're all business partners of the mega corporations, and so they're scared of annoying their business partners. In Europe, the same small companies are also business partners of mega corporations, so that there's something missing there. I don't know why the European companies aren't afraid of the same thing, but we should get the SMEs active on this, and we should also get the non-software companies active on this. We just have to first convince them and explain to them that they are at risk and that many other companies have already been targeted. So In the long term, hopefully the End Software Patents campaign will rely on small businesses making small donations and big non-software companies making big donations. However, that's not happening yet, so at the moment we're mostly relying on the free software community to kind of bootstrap the campaign. But even if we rely on the free software community, this isn't a specifically free software problem. So What we're focusing on is either changing the legislation or getting new results in the courts. Now, there have been a lot of discussions about other ways of reducing the software patent problem. In general, these have not been effective. They sometimes have small benefits or they work in small sectors, but in general, they will not solve the software patent problem. I can briefly mention one idea is patent pools. All our friends put their pool and patents into a pool, and then if a big bully attacks us, we can say, well, we have patents too. But the problem is, of course, most of our friends, they have patent agreements already with the other patent holders agreeing not to sue each other. And also when our friends put patents into a pool saying we won't use these against free software. Well, you know, it's our friends putting the software patents in there, and we weren't afraid of our friends suing us, so it's not a big comfort. We can review patents, we can look for prior art, we can look for patents that are too obvious to exist. Yeah, that can be useful. It's, you know, very slow, very expensive, but it can be useful. Sometimes if there's a particularly annoying patent, we can get rid of that. But in general, it can't solve the problem. And the TomTom case is an example. TomTom have been accused of violating 8 software patents. Eight patents. I think 3 of them are software patents. And they're patents that we know, well, we're very confident would be overturned in a court. It's the Microsoft FAT patents. However, they might be overturned in a court, but what's to say that if these 3 or all 8 were overturned, well, Microsoft has 10,000 software patents or 10,000 patents. What's to say that Microsoft won't just dig into their vault again and dig out another 8 and say, well, okay, you don't infringe those 8, do you infringe these 8? And this process can go on. So in general, to get rid of the problem, we have to have 0 software patents. Another problem with quality is that some software patents are good quality. The RSA algorithm, the MP3 encoding algorithm, public key encryption, you know, these were patented in various jurisdictions. However, you know, there's no way you can go to a patent office and say, you know, this is a terrible idea, it was completely obvious. So trying to overturn them that way, it's very unlikely to work, or it's not going to work completely. And one last option is that our licenses, we can, like in the GPLv3 process, we negotiated various clauses that could be added to GPLv3 to protect some free software users from the patents of companies that distribute GPLv3 software. But this can only work against, this only protects us against companies who are distributing GPLv3 software, you know, many of which are already our friends, so there was no problem in the first place. And also the clause, you know, it couldn't be made, there were limits to how strong it could be, because the stronger you make it, the more afraid the patent holders are going to be to distribute GPLv3 software. So with our licenses, we can only fix a very small amount, a very small category of the problem. So some people wonder why we're focusing on software patents. You know, how can you draw a line between different types of patents? One of the most important things is the tactical reasons, because if we extend the theory and decide that actually software patents are bad and all patents are probably bad, what we do is then, as well as having Microsoft against us, which is enough work, we also have the chemicals industry and the auto industry and the pharmaceutical industry against us, and this is more work than we can handle. So in general, we take a position on software patents, but we don't take a position on pharmaceutical patents. Maybe pharmaceutical patents are bad, maybe they're good. Yeah, that's just not our area. Another problem is that in other areas, for example, pharmaceuticals, sometimes the organizations that we think would be our natural allies, like the generics companies in pharmaceuticals, sometimes they don't like our policy because we want no software patents. But in the generics industry, a lot of the time they just want to talk about the length of patents or the how much damages you get or how clear they should be. You know, our solution doesn't naturally apply to their work. So we've done the research on software. We're sure that software patents are a bad idea. So we're focusing on getting rid of software patents. So the way ESP is going to work is under Ben Clemens, ESP worked on the Bilski case, which was extremely important. And Ben also did an economic study of the cost of software patents to American industry. And so these were very focused projects. And now we're going to try and step back a bit and look at all the projects that are happening regarding software patents and try to make all that information available to the other projects. Because when I look back at the EU, it's only been 4 or 5 years, but already the fantastic documents that we had at the time, they're starting to disappear. They're, you know, the websites are changing. Some news sites are disappearing. And it's very hard to find these documents. Some of the documents were only distributed in a mailing list that don't even have a public archive. So what we're going to do is we're going to try and put all this information together on a website and make it accessible so that the information in the EU is accessible to America and Australia and New Zealand and everywhere else, and the information from Bilski is available to these as well, so that other campaigns don't have to start from zero. They can build on what's already been done. So the first thing we're going to be putting online will be a wiki. And this will be in English first, and hopefully then in other languages soon after. But that will be publicly modifiable, and we hope that we'll be able to gather the information from all parts of the world and different points of view, and we'll be able to put it into some categorized format that makes it easily accessible. Then we'll start doing mail, an email alert, maybe once a week, on what's coming up in the shorter midterm future, what needs to be worked on, what new events have taken place, and we'll put a blog and a news site online as well. There will be more court cases in the US, not in the very short term, but there will also be new developments in the EU, and there are other developments in South Africa and New Zealand that we're aware of. However, we will not work on all of these, or when we do work on them, they won't be the 100% focus, because what we're going to try to do is work on each project, but always with a view to documenting everything, all the steps, so that our work on each project becomes a whole that is more useful for future campaigns. So rather than and software patents can currently afford to employ one person. One person can be useful. I don't want to reduce my effectiveness, but one person can't do all the work. So it's more important to try and make a platform so that other people can get active. One thing we'll have to do is we'll have to build a team, a working group for doing lobbying in the USA. We have, I have experience in the EU. We have some experience with the Bilski case that will be useful as well. But we still need to build a group of activists that will be able to, for example, find a contact in the Senate whenever they're discussing the Patent Reform Act. And some good news on this is that the League for Programming Freedom, which has been active on this fight against software patents since 1991? 89, okay, a long time, okay. So the League for Programming Freedom is getting active again. So they have a website, progfree.org, and so hopefully we'll be able to work with them as well as other groups and get a team active in America. And in general, the idea will be to have a global coordination, because so far all the campaigns have been focused on the EU, focused on Bilski. However, it's about time we actually started coordinating on a global level, because I'm pretty sure Microsoft has been coordinating their patent policy on this level for a long time. So some people have asked me, how can information from any one specific jurisdiction be useful on a global level? The legislation regarding software patents is usually quite vague, because most patent legislation was written 30 years ago, and it was written before modern technologies existed. A lot of it is based on the International TRIPS Agreement, which has a very vague wording. So often the wordings that exist in various jurisdictions, they're open to interpretation. So even if in America the court case should have been a legal issue, it's about deciding what does the law say. That's the theory, but in practice, the law is vague enough, and that the interests can be looked at, and people can decide, is it a good idea, not just is it what does the law say. So in this way, the legislation is vague, and we're going to have we have a lot of legal wordings that were developed during the Bilski case and during other campaigns, which can be useful. For example, we decided that to be patentable, an invention has to use forces of nature, or it has to use applied natural science, or it has to have significant post-production output. There are various wordings, and they mightn't fit into every jurisdiction, but it's a good starting point for to give people ideas for what wording might work in New Zealand or in Canada or in a future court case in the USA. One important thing is that we always have to avoid saying that software is technical. And that seems a little bit counterintuitive, but the TRIPS agreement, which most countries in the world have signed up to, says that inventions in fields of technology are patentable. So in Europe, we had to all the time talk about how software is not technical. So it takes a little bit of linguistic gymnastics, but it's just something you have to keep in mind from the start. So hopefully with a website making these issues clear, we can help lobbyists or campaigners avoid making the mistakes that we made in the early days in Europe. So this way, we managed to make use of campaigns, whether they've succeeded or not. Whether a campaign has been effective or not, we can always look at the legal wordings and put them on a website and contribute all these ideas, so that something that failed in one jurisdiction could be improved and it might work in another jurisdiction. We also want to do examinations of some specific examples, and I'll just give two examples of innovations that one that should be patentable and one that shouldn't be patentable. The one that could be patentable is anti-lock braking. The car industry came to Europe, the car industry from Asia came to Europe and argued for software patents because they said they have brakes, they have a computer, and they have software, and they don't change the brakes, and they don't change the computer, they just change the software, and all of a sudden they have anti-lock braking systems. And so they said, well, this is obviously a software patent, and you're against software patents, so we're against you. So we had to work through the example, and we managed to explain that actually, no, this isn't a software patent. It's being implemented in software, but the patent, the innovation, is on how the brakes are being used. It happens to be controlled by software in your implementation, but it could be done manually, or there would be theoretically other ways of doing it. It's not necessarily a software patent. So this is a braking patent, and we have to tell the car industry, okay, you don't have to fight against us. We're not trying to invalidate your car patents. But it was difficult at first for the politicians to understand. Sorry, I've got a question there.
If the car industry patents anti-lock brakes, and then you learn to mimic that same thing with your foot, are you a patent violator? That seems like where it is close enough to being a software patent, because it's just a way of allowing software to control hardware, which is a lot of what we're working against too.
Theoretically, maybe. So if a rich enough person starts doing that with their foot, I think he should be worried. Well, what they could do is they could claim the whole thing as an invention, but that wouldn't stop us from just taking the software idea and implementing the software idea on our general purpose computers. So,
yeah, at one point before software patents kicked in, you actually, if you wanted to patent software, had to patent it by describing it as hardware, which then made it very easy to invalidate.
Yeah, in Europe we had computer implemented inventions instead of software patents. Which Microsoft always claims are on a limited resource computer. So I think they might be eligible for a patent if they manage to invent a non-limited resource computer. I think that would be quite an innovation.
I think one thing to keep in mind is that the real difference is how you describe this to the patent office when you make a patent application. There's a million ways to describe anything, any process, any whether you describe it as a software algorithm or as a business method. Makes a big difference to patent office.
Yeah.
That's why terminology is very important, and how these things are described in legal terms is very important.
And that's one of the fundamental problems with software patents, is that software is just so abstract that it's possible to describe it in so many ways, and it's very difficult to have any clear patents on software. Another question?
There are people who say that the Bilski case didn't actually change anything. Is it your opinion that it did?
Absolutely. No, there have already been 5 software patents that have been overturned based on the Bilski case. So it's clear that it has made a difference.
What was the nature of the change?
The Bilski case introduced a new test which excluded, which basically required that there is some kind of activity I think it might have even said physical activity, significant physical activity in the innovation. So this would mean that what are called pure software and innovations are excluded. Now, the actual wording in the Bilski ruling, it's open to interpretation, so it's not exactly clear. However, the U.S. Patent Office has, they've rejected or they've overturned five existing software patents, so they've decided that it's substantial and it's realistic enough that there are grounds for actually rejecting software patents based on the Bilski decision. So. Well, it'll come down to the lawyers will have to go through the history of American court rulings and legislation. In Europe, we started off by saying you have to have an innovation in forces of nature, because in Germany there was a case law saying which said that a certain patent was rejected because there was no innovation in forces of nature. So we used that because there was some precedent. Then later we changed our minds and we used applied natural science. And this came from another court case. So, in general, it will depend on the jurisdiction. But if we can gather together the terminology that worked in some jurisdictions, then at least we'll have a starting place. We can look at American legislation. Does the term forces of nature have a meaning in American legislation? Maybe it does. Maybe it's very useful, or maybe we have to avoid it. Does applied natural science have a meaning? What is the meaning? So these are. It'll have to be decided at the time.
I think you have time for one more.
Okay, I'm going to skip how lobbying is done. Very very basic things. When we're doing the lobbying, the most important thing probably is that we always have to have a list of arguments. We often have ideas for the perfect argument. We have ideas for example explaining that software patents cause monopolies or software patents interfere with freedom of expression or freedom of the press. And then you can go to a politician and you can actually find politicians that don't actually mind monopolies and think, well, maybe it hurts our country, but it gives us a global dominance in that field. Or you have politicians that aren't really big fans of freedom of the press because they got elected because they're friends with the TV executives. So there were some surprising things like that. And also the politicians, politicians don't care about software patents. They always link each issue into something they do care about. Some politicians, had a history. They used to be a journalist. Some worked on the coast and they love, they think marine boundaries are important. But what we have to do is we have to have a list of arguments. We have to have 10, 15 different things, and for each argument we have to have studies backing them up, because we can't just go to a politician and say we should block software patents because they're bad for small companies, and then they ask me what small companies. I say, well, it's my opinion that they block small companies. So for each of the arguments, the venture capitalists we have venture capitalists that are against software patents. We have standards organizations or companies that need standards. They find it very difficult to implement standards with software patents. Sorry, question?
Sorry, I'm going to wait until you finish
this. Oh, I'm finished in 30 seconds, okay. It blocks innovation. It blocks free software in some ways. Free software wasn't a very good argument maybe 8 years ago, but free software has become very prominent nowadays, so we can actually now talk to MEPs or talk to politicians about free software developers not being big fans of software patents. Then the non-software patent companies, hopefully they'll get on board, but even so, we can still go to the politicians with the study showing how software patents are costing $11.2 billion, and that's something that the politicians can understand. We can make the argument about monopolies. We can point out that patents are bureaucratic. This is every software patent requires a bureaucracy in the patent office, in litigation, between the companies. The legal teams have to analyze these things, and we can also make the argument that software patents are generally bad for the economy. The U.S. Patent Office Patents and Trademarks Office is funded by the taxpayer, plus by the people who are applying for all these patents. And the companies, such as the non-software patent companies that have paid out $11.2 billion, they're the people who are paying for the patent system, in particular software patents. So this is an argument about the economy, and it mightn't be the first argument that we think of when we think of software patents, but we have to always have the list ready so that whenever we get a feel for what the politician's interest is, that's how we pick the right argument for the politician, not our favorite argument. Okay, so that's what we're going to be doing. Hopefully, the wiki will go online within the next 2 weeks. Hopefully, So the main theme is that we're going to try and make it possible for other people to get involved. Donations will be needed at some point. Of course, the FSF is handling donations for End Software Patents, but End Software Patents does have a separate bank account and will be doing its own fundraising. So we're going to be looking for help with that at some point pretty soon. Currently, the general model of End Software Patents is pretty low cost. So that's our philosophy, but we still have some costs. Last question.
So the people who put the software patents in Europe are like zombies; they don't stay dead. So are they coming back? What are they?
They're coming back, but they're like a bad music band. They've been coming back every year for the last 4 years.
are they doing the same thing, or have they?
No. You see, the problem is because in Europe we were completely disorganized at the time. They picked their favorite way of getting software patents, and they said, okay, we'll just tell the politicians to change the legislation and everything will go smoothly, and it didn't. And now they're looking around, that was their favorite method and didn't work. So all the methods they're trying now, it's all plan B, plan C, plan D. So each time they make an attempt, it's not a very strong attempt. However, if they keep on trying, eventually they're gonna get there. So we have to also, people took a bit of a break in Europe after the lobbying from in 2005. That was, people were a bit burned out. People were sleeping on the floor. We actually slept many times on the floor in the parliament. It was like an old school hacker community in the free software community, until, of course, the politicians told us, there are beds in the parliament. You can just sleep in the beds if you want. Oh, yeah. Okay. So we start. Well, they're the politicians' beds, but the politicians weren't present. That's not how we do our lobbying. Okay, so I think I've eaten all the time. Okay, thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. And finally, tonight we have Richard Salmon, President of the Free Software Foundation and founder of the GNU Project, who I believe is going to cover a few different things. We have the two free software awards to hand out, the award